This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
You have to ask them, but it sounds like they're afraid of the truth, and that's most unfortunate. But hopefully they'll get used to the idea that the American people want us to find the truth, and that is what we intend to do.
Yep, it's a bill that passed the House 252 to 175, 35 Republicans supporting the measure. It's about forming that commission to look into January 6th. And the attack, I think it was an attack on the Capitol. Hey, hey, everybody. Kate Delaney, thanks for joining us on this show. So, again, 35 Republicans supporting the measure. It's going to be a different story when you talk about the Senate. As far as the Senate's concerned, you already look at Mitch McConnell saying it's not clear what new facts or additional investigation yet another commission could actually lay on top of existing efforts by law enforcement and Congress. So there are questions about the attack, of course, what degree it was coordinated, as well as details about what else was going on while it was taking place. But Mitch McConnell and House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy say that they are not supporting that effort. They are not supporting the effort to hold a commission. And they slam the deal. They say it's partisan and it duplicates efforts, despite it being really struck between the Democrats and the Republican leaders of the House Homeland Security Committee. Other Republicans were more direct about their concerns that the commission's work would be politically problematic for the party. Senator John Thune from South Dakota, the minority whip. Anything that gets us rehashing the 2020 election, I think, is a day lost on being able to draw a contrast between us and the Democrats' very radical left-wing agenda. The legislation is actually modeled on the commission created to look at September 11th, the terrorist attacks then, and its two leaders, Tom Kaine, and Lee Hamilton, who came out in support of the bill on Wednesday. And it's interesting to look at the avalanche of reaction, and I certainly have gotten that in the mailbag that I get every single day. You can always throw me your thoughts, Kate at katedelaneyradio.com. From many, many Republicans, I've heard, no, we need to know what happened. And I've had people pledge that they're lifelong Republicans. They're not against some of the party leaders saying what they're saying, but they think that it should be examined, especially if it's bipartisan and you have an equal amount of Republicans and Democrats. I think what we have to keep in mind with all of this is the assault on the Capitol ended up in the deaths of five people, and 140 police officers were also injured. And to me, the thing that really sticks out, and I can remember this story, is one who lost an eye. So do we not look into that when the rest of the world was laughing in our face, especially the Russians, to see how vulnerable we were? This was not a tour around the Capitol. These were people that were screaming, you know, hang Mike Pence, Republican vice president. So I think it's time to kind of put the sword down and look at it. Look at it like 9/11. And that's why you have Republicans and Democrats. The 35 Republicans who supported creating the commission are a far greater number than the 10 who voted, remember, to impeach the former president. So that shows some division within the conference. Only four Republicans spoke against the bill during floor debate, but it's a much different story when you talk about the Senate. So what will happen in the Senate? Some people have noted that Kevin McCarthy didn't speak during floor debate on the bill and is just urging a no vote on legislation that would create this commission. I'm assuming he would probably be called to testify. He spoke to the former president, Donald Trump, that day. Remember, there were all those stories about him pleading with Trump to publicly call on the mob to leave the Capitol. So I'm assuming that's exactly what would happen. And McConnell's opposition came after he told reporters that Senate Republicans were undecided about the commission. And he said, after careful consideration, I made the decision to oppose the House Democrats' slanted and unbalanced proposal for another commission to study the events of January 6th. So I would say if there's things that they don't like that are in this proposal, then change them. Come back to the table and renegotiate that, figure it out. And for goodness sake, what kind of a country are we where we can't have an equal number of Republicans and Democrats look at this? You know, could you put an accountability clause? Could you put a timeline on it? Why not? You know, that's part of the problem. Half the bills never even get read. They're so long, and even if they're not long, they're not read thoroughly all the way through on some of these votes, etc. And why can't you rip it up and put a timeline on it? Why can't you put a timeline on, okay, this is the date that we're done with this, and not let it go on and on and on and on and on and on and on. And I get that. But certainly it's something that we as a nation should demand that it be looked into for the safety of certainly many Republicans and Democrats, right? You know, even Mitt Romney, he kind of is reserving judgment. He's saying he'll support the bill only if it truly is bipartisan. And I think that's the key. It has to be bipartisan. It has to have facts. It has to be an objective investigation of what happened that day. We have problems if we cannot have that. An independent commission. And then put it to bed. Have an independent commission and have it out there. Period. This is what we definitely need. Absolutely. 100%. But I don't think it goes up the flagpole with the Senate. We'll see. We'll see what happens there. Also buzzing around the U.S., of course, is coronavirus talk, specifically on what is happening with schools and masks. So while it's up to adults what they decide they're going to do. In a lot of cases, I mean, there's some establishments that were asking people to wear masks, so you don't go in. If you don't have a mask, fine. But a lot of the big stores and even some of the smaller stores are saying that you can come in now, you know, period. It's fine. But here's what's interesting is what's going to happen going back to school for kids. So there have been protests in some areas of the country over, you know, let my child breathe. I don't see why they have to have a mask. There's a growing number of school systems that are removing mask requirements for students, but then you've got parents, other parents that are concerned it's too soon to lift the rules. In Florida, the head of a school system announced that she would agree to remove a mask requirement that was in place since September. And that decision came after a big fight over mask requirements. Should it remain until the end of the school year and then you worry about it in the fall? Imagine. Now, Texas barred the mask mandates for schools, defying the CDC guidance and saying, yeah, no. The governor said, we don't have to have masks. But how is that integrated into the system? Complications, never easy. Bitcoin plummets, we're talking about it next.
Hey everybody, if you've ever thought about heirloom beans as a storable survival food, I've got great news. In fact, I'll bet it's the best news you've heard in a while. Here's the thing, we've just received a fresh batch of gourmet heirloom beans, survival soup beans. These beans are gorgeous, highly nutritious, and above all, with no hesitation whatsoever, the best tasting beans in the entire world. The best part? We've dropped the price by 33% this week for listeners who know higher food prices are coming and want an inflation hedge you can actually eat if you want to. Gets even better. With your permission and with a high regard for your health and well-being, I also want to send you 2 pounds of what we think is the single most underrated superfood in the world. world, period. Go to soupbeansurvival.com, that's soupbeansurvival.com, and discover the real reason we're giving this unusual superfood away at soupbeansurvival.com, that's soupbeansurvival.com.
If there's a sudden disaster and you can't get to the grocery store or they're all out of food, what would you do? You'll wish you had emergency food to get you through the crisis, and that's why we're here. We're MyPatriotSupply.com, America's leading source of emergency food. Our food lasts for up to 25 years, and millions of families trust us for their disaster survival. Won't you join us? Unlike other food companies, we don't skimp on calories. Our meals give you more than 2,000 calories per day. Why? Because that's what you need to survive any challenging crisis. And right now, you can save $50 on our popular 4-week emergency food kit. Just go to MyPatriotSupply.com and place your order. We ship fast, 2 to 3 days max, and your food arrives discreetly right to your door. So order today and save $50 at MyPatriotSupply.com. That's MyPatriotSupply.com.
Hi, this is Kate Delaney, and I have a confession to make. I'm addicted to journaling. So many of the ideas I get from my radio show or books hit me at weird times, and I need to write them down. Does that happen to you? So I decided to create my own journal with my pal Jackie. Looking for a great gift for your wife, sister, mother, aunt, friend, or boss to end 2020 or kick off 2021? My girlfriend's gratitude journal includes inspirational quotes and loads of room to write, and it just dropped. Here's the best part. You'll also get a copy of my Forbes book, Deal Your Own Destiny. Increase your odds, win big, and become extraordinary. It's loaded with ways to chart your own life and filled with the success habits with some of the biggest names on the planet, stuff they shared with me that can help catapult you. Here's the best part. For both hardcover books, it's just $29.99. Yep, go to katedelaneyradio.com, click on books, and special offer. Again, all of it for just $29.99. I got the shipping covered. What are you waiting for? Just go to katedelaneyradio.com, click on books, and special offer today. Going on with cryptocurrency in general, and it was a crypto crash, lots wiped out. So Bitcoin fell as much as 30%, investors kind of souring on cryptocurrencies, and I think it's because, like the Wall Street Journal said, they're shunning the riskier assets, and there's a sudden shift. So cryptocurrencies had been surging over the past year. There's a lot of excitement, especially when you've got people like Elon Musk talking about it, Snoop Dogg, etc. There was kind of a little bit of a buzz. Not a little bit, actually. There was a lot of buzz. But, you know, there were a crowd of people who dug their heels in and felt that it was inevitable that crypto would become an asset class in their own right, but that is it really a legitimate, would it ever fulfill that vision of becoming a legitimate alternative currency? And I've talked about this before, and maybe we'll air this again sometime, but I had this conversation with Steve Forbes several years ago, and I asked him about you know, cryptocurrency, and he said it would never become a legitimate alternative, basically. He said there's nothing backing it. It won't. But think of the momentum. The momentum that drove prices higher is now sending them, unfortunately, lower, right? Giveth and taketh away. So Bitcoin traded around 7,000 at the beginning of 2020. It peaked at 64,000 plus in mid-April. And since then, it's fallen 41% to 38,390 exactly as of Wednesday, and even dropped a little bit lower earlier in the day. And I think it's also people tempted to invest because it went up in value, and they have the fear of what? The fear of missing out, FOMO. So they want to get in, but it is volatile. Right? And whenever there's a boom, say it with me, people, there's a bust. Eventually there's a bust. So what's happened is, because of that, so Tesla, GameStop, remember that? Investors piled into betting that they could go up, up, up. And then they run out of steam, and it eventually tapers back. So the Dow fell a little bit. Partly because of riskier assets, right? And there was a sell-off, and the sell-off, you think of Dogecoin, and it fell 27% to about 35%. It had gone as low as 22 cents. So 35 cents, but it had gone as low as 22. It was either 26% lower at $2,536 after falling more than 40%. So regardless, you hear those numbers, they're negative. The total value of the cryptocurrency market has declined by more than $470 billion to about $1.66 trillion. Now, where am I pulling these numbers out of? This is CoinMarketCap. Their numbers say Bitcoin's share has fallen to $721 billion. So it kind of fits a pattern in digital currency if you look at the history, because the history isn't a long history, but if you look at it, that's what you've seen. You know, I know somebody who made a lot of money on Bitcoin, but they jumped in early and jumped out at the right time, and they had the opportunity to jump out, because if you look at 2017, even the Wall Street Journal was talking about this, the Bitcoin's price went from 1,000 to nearly 20,000. And that was when you saw, you know, the Bitcoin futures market open up, the CME group. And that was the debut. So, bum ba da da, here's crypto's arrival, and here we go. And we're off to the races. You know, and it does bring up that question of, will we really have digital currency? Does it work? Will it work? Are people wrong? Will it ever realize what the initial idea was? Will it ever fully arrive and become a legitimate alternative to currency? And there's still lots to talk about. Where it could be successful and what could happen, but then you see how it plummets and you get people become victims to the hype, and then they buy in and they're thinking, this is it, this is the thing, and I'm looking at the graphs and I'm looking at this, and then poof, something happens, and we know the markets move on negative news, right? And something happens, something's tweeted out, something changes, and then there it goes. I mean, look at Elon Musk when he said Tesla was suspending accepting Bitcoin. So that was a big deal. When they were accepting Bitcoin, it's like, oh, wow, they're accepting Bitcoin. And then that grows and grows and grows, and people maybe who shouldn't get in jump in. I'm not giving anyone financial advice, but it's interesting to look at that, right? What do they say about no free lunches? Or jumping in too much later after the fact. In other words, not first to market, not the first person in the door, and watching what's happening and who's accepting and where can you go and where are you making that money ultimately. you know, boom, that's it. I said something about traveling earlier, and you know, it's an interesting thing. I did absolutely get a bunch of email about this, and I think the reason why is because I was talking about the fact that the airlines are, it hasn't happened, but the airlines are talking seriously about weighing passengers. So you have to weigh before you get on the plane. So it hasn't happened yet, but they're doing surveys and they're looking at a voluntary basis and, you know, randomly selecting passengers. Oh, that's like the 9/11 shakedown. So the weight of an average adult passenger and carry-on bag is going to be increased to 190 pounds in the summer and 195 pounds in the winter. Do they know what our winter clothes weigh? Especially some of those heavy coats if you're going deep into the Midwest. And they're saying that's you holding your carry-on. So add the weight of whatever that carry-on luggage is for you. But it is up from what it used to be. It used to be the FAA standards were 170 pounds and 170 pounds in the summer, 175 pounds in the winter. I'm just thinking, right? So for female passengers, the average weight, this is them, they're saying carry-ons, 145 pounds to 179 pounds in the summer, from 150 to 185 pounds, 84 pounds in the winter. And males, will go from 185 pounds in the summer to 200 pounds, up to 200 pounds, and from 190 pounds to 205 pounds in the winter. Boy, do you think a lot of people will start going on diets? How much does that carry-on weigh? And in all seriousness, some carry-ons are ridiculously heavy. I mean, people are bringing luggage. And it might be small luggage, but it is jammed. I can't imagine it doesn't weigh maybe 15, 20 pounds. I don't know. I've seen people struggle with their luggage. And if they do this thing of weighing people, and it does become a thing further down the road, what happens? Do they make you pay extra? But how can they do that? Because the idea is we have to have so much weight on the plane, and that's what we're concerned about. So would they just advise you, make sure you weigh at home to make sure that you fit into the right category? Ooh, I can sort of see some problems with that. Can you? I'm just saying, right? Meet you on the flip side.
Have you ever thought about turning your Glock, XD family, or 1911 handgun into a semi-automatic carbine? It only takes about 30 seconds. The MechTech Carbine Upper is classified as an accessory and can be delivered right to your doorstep with no FFL or background check required. It's the world's most versatile pistol accessory. Build your custom upper today. Simply go to handgunconversion.com. That's handgunconversion.com.
Frustrated trying to get business capital? Want to take the slow process and rejection out of the equation? GCNLoans.com removes the slow, irritating approval process. Instead, get quick, simple funding. Powered by David Allen Capital, 80% of our pre-qualified clients are approved in days. Pre-qualify at GCNLoans.com and get your money this week. It's that easy. GCNLoans.com. That's GCNLoans.com.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
USA Radio News with Dan Naraki.
Americans have been adjusting to new guidelines for mask wearing released last week by the CDC. The new guidance allows for people who are fully vaccinated not to have to wear masks indoors, except for in crowded areas. But the sudden shift caused confusion for businesses trying to reopen and recover from the effects of the pandemic. Dr. Anthony Fauci says the confusion is not their fault. The chief White House medical advisor tells CNN that some of the confusion is coming from establishments trying to figure out how best to follow the new guidelines.
So what the establishment owners, several of them have said, you know, the CDC recommendations were fine, that people who are fully vaccinated don't have to wear masks indoor, but since I don't know who's vaccinated or not, if you come into my establishment, you still have to wear a mask. So where the confusion is that people are saying, wait a minute, some people are saying you don't have to wear masks when you're vaccinated, and now you're telling me when I go into an establishment, I have to wear a mask.
This is USA Radio News. Three Republican House members are facing fines after defying the body's mask requirements. Tim Berg has more from the USA Radio News Phoenix Bureau.
Three Republican lawmakers face a $500 fine for skirting mask rules on the floor of the House of Representatives. Florida Republican Congressman Brian Mast saying he's following the recent guidelines issued by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Mast telling Fox News he believes this is just another power grab by the Democrats.
I went onto the floor of the House of Representatives. I had to speak, and as I was sitting there, a member of the House Sergeant at Arms staff approached me, asked me if I was going to put on my mask. I said no. They said, okay, you will be fined for that. The only thing that Speaker Pelosi is protecting right now is control, is tyrannical control. Because if you've been vaccinated, there's no reason for you to have to wear a mask.
From the USA Radio News Phoenix Bureau, I'm Tim Berg.
And you're listening to USA Radio News.
If you're trying to quit drinking or doing too many drugs, listen to me. You don't know me and we'll never meet. I had a problem like you once. I drank and used to party a little too much till it got out of control and almost ruined my life. I realized I needed help to fix my problem before it totally destroyed me. If you've tried to fix your drinking and drug problem and you know you can't do it alone, you need to call the National Treatment Advisors. They'll immerse you into a 30-day program to replace your old habits with new habits and totally change your life. And if you have PPO private health insurance, the entire program may be covered. Fix your problem right now before it gets any worse. Get clean. Call now and learn more. 800-296-1252. 800-296-1252. 800-296-1252. 800-296-1252.
What have you done to me? What have we done to each other? What have we done to this world, sister and brother? Why did we not listen? Why could we not see? It's time to start doing, or we'll all be history. We'll all be history. Pull the world back together, from the sky down to the sea. Let the earth turn forever, save the last land for me.
Joining us now from the UK is Christopher Pierce. He's written a story that makes you think, I'm going to say, but you also disappear in the story, and you also get a little frightened, I think, in the story, too. It's called The Last Lands. What happens if global warming happens? Think about that, and he has thought about it, and he's weaved quite a tale. Christopher, thanks so much for joining us on the show.
Hi, good afternoon.
What was it that led you to tackle global warming and come up with a story and a novel?
Well, it's a very current and real issue, is global warming. But my idea behind it is, what if it happens? What if that happens? What will the future be like? So I sat down and thought about it. Did a little bit of research, how high would the seas have to rise? How much ice would have to melt? What will the temperature, average temperature of the air be? And that was the only research I did. What I really wanted to do is write a scenario, a fictional picture of what things might be like if global warming goes absolutely crazy. And this is a story about what happens
So we're not going to give away all the details, but pull us in. Give us a synopsis of this tale.
Okay, so, like any fictional story, you've got good and bad. You've got betrayal and love. And you've got people who are still living on the earth, but you've got one type who's living off the land and living to exist as part of the land. So they're not using machines or pumping any kind of toxins into the air. But the other people who are living on Antarctica, they live in a very advanced world. So they continue to make machines. But the only land left is going to be at the north. That's the only land what's going to be left. Because Antarctica, that's not going to be any more very shortly. So they have to try and find the last lands, which are in the North Pole. And it's about what happens when these two peoples who've been apart for nearly 400 years now, they didn't really know about each other, and it's about what happens when they meet. Think about when the Europeans first landed in the Americas. It's similar to that.
Yes, and that's why I said it's hair-raising, I guess is a better way to describe it. What okay. Then? One step here and one step there as you try to kind of navigate, like you say, the piece of land that's left, basically.
The only inhabitable lands that are left to live on.
Was it fun for you to let you're a storyteller. We talked off the air. Was this fun for you to weave this tale?
Yes, it was fun. But, I mean, I'd be at work. I'm an engineer by trade. I still work full-time as an engineer. And I would be working in my position of work, and I would stop, find a scrap of paper, get a pen, and just jot down the idea what had come into my head. Because I was thinking about it all the time. And I just had to jot the idea down before it went. And I've got pieces of paper everywhere. I've got a book with all my writings in it before I finally started a computer and started to actually type it. I mean, I've wrote this story about four times, I think. Each time it was different, I think. But I enjoyed it very much, to answer your question. I enjoyed thinking about the characters, even naming them was a joy, to give them a name what fitted them. As such.
So, yes, you got lost in the characters, which is a sign of a good writer. Do you have a favorite character?
There's two or three favorites. There's the main character, the boy who I've called Uveo. And I like his character because he's all the good in him. But I also like Grace, who's from the Antarctic. Because she's from this advanced world, but she brings good from them as well as the bad. So I like Grace. I like Atwell. I like Atwell is one of the who's a little bit misguided, and he gets lost. I'm afraid.
He gets lost, to say the least.
Yeah, to say the least, he gets a little bit lost.
Yeah.
So, yes, I have a lot. All the characters, you know, I thought about them. I tried to picture them. If you speak to somebody on the phone or who you've never met in your life, you tend to get a picture of them. When you read a book, as you know, you'll picture these characters. So when I was writing, I pictured the characters in my mind to make them real. To me, yes, I enjoyed my characters, yeah, and hopefully I will enjoy them again soon.
Yeah, the name of the book is The Last Lands. We're speaking with Christopher Pierce. He's in the UK. You can pick up this book on Amazon. And I wonder, as I was thinking about this morning, what do you And we've kind of talked about it, but what do you want the reader to come away with after they read your book?
Well, first of all, I want them to enjoy a fictional story. But I really do want people to think, what if that happened? What if that happened? What if, in a lot less time than you think or anybody thinks, this world will have a lot of land which is uninhabitable? And we all have to do our little bit. And, you know, I don't want to be a hypocrite. I do my little bit. I'll do my, you know, recycling, and I walk to work, for example. I do have a bicycle, but I still have a car. But I want a car, but I want to put electricity in it, not petrol. I want to stop burning carbon fuels, fossil fuels. I want to stop putting carbon into the earth. What I want is for the world to have energy, clean energy. Now, the sun gives off enough energy in 10 seconds to last the whole world all day. But we just cannot harness it at the moment. We need to try and harness clean energy, or lands will die, people will die, and the biodiversity of life will change forever. And it's not will, it is. It's been happening for 30 years or so. What we're aware of, longer than that, we need to listen to our campaigners, David Attenborough, Greta Thunberg. These people are not saying things just for the sake of saying it. It is real and it's happening. I just want people to think about that. That's all.
Yeah. I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you this. Will you write another book? Will you write another book maybe about this in a different way or something completely different? Because I have to think, I'm hearing so much joy about the writing process for you. And I haven't always heard that with a lot of people, and creating the characters, and you have the theme. Will we see another book from you?
There's definitely another book coming. I've started writing it. Hopefully it won't take me as long as the first book. But now the characters are established, it's not going to. So what I'm looking for is a sequel. And so some of the favourite characters from the first book will be there. So that second book is in writing. So yes, I've very much continued with what is a hobby for me.
Yeah. So that means you're still having fun, and that's a good thing.
Still having fun, still thinking about scenarios, because, of course, there's plenty of more scenarios what could happen.
Yeah, absolutely. What a delight to have you on the show. The Last Lands, Christopher Pierce, pick it up on Amazon, and you'll read this. So make sure you have time to read it, like, because you'll sit down and you're not going to want to put it down. Christopher, thank you.
Sorry, yeah, thank you. I was going to say, because it is a relatively short novel, people will pick it up and complete it within a day or two.
Exactly. You just have to make sure you have the space, because they're not, like I said, you don't want to put it down for a second, honestly. I don't say that about a lot of books. So, yeah,
well,
great weekend read, or in between, certainly work, etc. But Christopher, thank you.
Thank you very much.
This is Kate Delaney, and I have a confession to make. I'm addicted to journaling. So many of the ideas I get from my radio show or books hit me at weird times, and I need to write them down. Does that happen to you? So I decided to create my own journal with my pal Jackie. Looking for a great gift for your wife, sister, mother, aunt, friend, or boss to end 2020 or kick off 2021? My girlfriend's gratitude journal includes inspirational quotes and loads of room to write, and it just dropped. Here's the best part. You'll also get a copy of my Forbes book, Deal Your Own Destiny. Increase your odds, win big, and become extraordinary. It's loaded with ways to chart your own life and filled with the success habits with some of the biggest names on the planet, stuff they shared with me that can help catapult you. Here's the best part. For both hardcover books, it's just $29.99. Yep, go to katedelaneyradio.com, click on books, and special offer. Again, all of it for just $29.99. I got the shipping covered. What are you waiting for? Just go to katedelaneyradio.com, click on books, and special offer today.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions. SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
I tried other brands, but I came back to my sunshine.
For the best hot or cold pain relief, get the best. Get a Sunny Bay heating pad.
Sometimes life can be a pain in the neck, or back, or shoulder.
And the best relief for that pain is a Sunny Bay heating pad. Did you know that the American College of Physicians said that one of the best ways to treat muscle pain is heat therapy? Sunny Bay heating pads are handmade with high quality, can be used at home or at work, and have a lifetime 100% positive rating on both Amazon and Etsy.
Why take another pill?
Many people use our Sunny Bay heating pads alone and got rid of the neck pain.
Long distance travel or long hours in front of a computer can take its toll on your body.
Our homegrown small business tries to help people just like us. That's why we design and test our handmade products with great care before we introduce them to the public. You can easily find Sunny Bay heating pads on Amazon. Just go to Amazon.com and search for Sunny Bay heating pads.
Join me, George Norrie, for Contact in the Desert Worldwide Virtual UFO Conference, June 25th to the 28th. Contact in the Desert will be an epic weekend of exploration into UFOs, ancient alien civilizations, consciousness, AI, crop circles, and cutting-edge science. More than 130 presentations, 67 speakers, and 2 extra weeks to view our extraordinary lineup. Get your tickets today at contactinthedesert.com. It's time to make contact. Contactinthedesert.com.
Joins us this time around for Airplane Stories and Histories. It's a book that chronicles 200 years, can you imagine, of aviation highlights, starting from the very beginning, the pioneers. Norman, thanks for joining us.
You're welcome.
What made you decide, obviously you have a love for planes and flight, but what made you decide to pull this together? Because that's quite an undertaking.
Well, first of all, you have to look at a little bit of my background. When I graduated as an aeronautical engineer back in 1948. So after I retired, I was looking for things to do, and I'd written quite a few aircraft or aviation articles for magazines. So I started pulling stuff together, and I had a whole lot of what I thought seemed to be articles on aviation. I decided that rather than having a series of articles, I would publish it as a book. I put them all together and stitched it together a few times, and that's how come the book eventually developed.
Yeah, and you know, you and I talked off the air, and you cover, of course, the Wright brothers, Charles Lindbergh, but there's other notables too, like Sir Geoffrey de Havilland. And what was Sir Geoffrey's contribution to flight and his history?
Well, Sir Geoffrey, he was one of the first pioneers in England, and he started building airplanes back before World War One. In World War One, the Havilland airplane was the first fighter airplane on the British side to operate against the Fokkers in Germany. So he was one of the first ones in that line. Later on, he was responsible for the Mosquito bomber, which was called the Wooden Wonder. And again, skipping along very rapidly, he was also the leader of the de Havilland Comet, which was the world's first jet airliner. So, in a nutshell, he did quite a bit.
Yeah, de Havilland, yeah.
Mm-hmm. He had three sons. Two of them died as test pilots.
Wow. For you and your background, what did you see? Because of 1940, an aeronautical engineer, what did you work on?
In the 1940s, I was working on the Comet, the Comet jet airliner. Before that, I'd been working on helping on the testing airplanes at de Havilland, testing Comet, testing Mosquito bombers. And then as the war ended, we went into civil aircraft, and I was working on the Comet until I decided to emigrate to Canada.
Wow. So you emigrate to Canada, and then what happens? What are you working on there?
An airplane called the Avro Arrow, which was the Royal Canadian Air Force was looking for a Mach 2, that's an airplane that travels twice the speed of sound, to protect the distant early warning line running along the Arctic Circle to protect the Canada and the U.S. from Russian bombers. So we came up with the Arrow. I have a whole chapter in my book describing the development and the demise of the Arrow.
Yeah, the Arrow, too, was quite an interesting a piece of machinery, and there you were right on the front lines. When you look at all these planes, and you look at the Spitfire and the Mustang and the Mosquito and the Comet and the Arrow, as you mentioned, and the Boeing 747, which changed so much for travel for people all over the world at the time, and the C-5 Galaxy, do you have a favorite plane? Do you have a favorite jet engine, any of that?
I like so many of them. I like the Comet a great deal. That was one of my favorites. The Arrow, I guess, was probably one of my favorites. I think probably more than any other. I worked on the Arrow probably longer than any other aeroplane. I guess I have to qualify that statement, too, that I worked on the Lockheed C-130 for years and years and years. The C-130 is still, they're still designing changes to it even now.
Yeah.
The C-130 first flew in about 1953, I think it was, and they're still coming up with new versions of it even now.
Wow.
Fantastic.
Wow, fantastic airline, right? Fantastic plane. So then you look at the pioneers, and I mentioned them, the Wright brothers, Charles Lindbergh, Amelia Earhart, so many, R.J. Mitchell, their exploits, all of that. This is a tough question, too, but if you had to just pick one, who had the biggest impact on flight?
The biggest. Oh, boy. Apart from the Wright brothers that started it, yeah. Let's see. Well, it's very difficult to go and pick any one. The Graham Curtis had a very big impact way back in the early days. And then later on, there's no doubt that Alan Lockheed obviously had a tremendous impact. He designed airplanes like the Lockheed Vega that Amelia Earhart used and Wiley Post used. They flew the Lockheed Vega. That was back before World War II. They flew around the world, at least Wiley Post did.
Yeah.
ones that have the most impact.
Yeah. Yeah, because of what they did for aviation in general. The stories are so fascinating. What do you hope people take away from reading your book, Airplane Stories and Histories?
One thing they're going to take away is they got to learn a lot about that they didn't know before. They said, geez, that's fantastic. But flying across the Atlantic, for example, in the Curtiss NC-4 flying boats, they probably never knew that the U.S. had these NC-4 flying boats flying across the Atlantic back in, 1919, and with U.S. Navy warships stationed every few miles along the route in case anybody came down in the Atlantic. So they're going to learn a lot that they never knew before. Also, very few people know very much about Sir George Cayley. He's not publicized very much. So that's something that that's going to wake them up a lot.
George Cayley, let me stop you there. George Cayley has been called the father of aerial navigation, father of aviation, you talk about it, and the true inventor of the aeroplane. But he didn't make the first flight in an aeroplane that was powered and was able to land on ground. That was, you talk about that whole thing, because you give honor to the Wright brothers, and you said that.
He didn't have any power on it,
Yeah, so that makes such a big difference there. But he has such an interesting story, and that's one of many in this book. Absolutely. Thank you so much, Norm, for joining us. You can get the book on Amazon.
That's right. Yes, Amazon. Yeah.
Yep. Thank you, Norm.
You got it. Thank you very much.
So it's so interesting, and boy, really, he dug deep in this, and I am a fan of aviation. There are things that I learned from reading his book. He's right, there's things you didn't know, and it was brilliant at the end that he talked about Sir George Cayley, because I did not know George Cayley. He lived in the late 1700s and early 1800s, and it's right, the honor of the flight went to Orville and Wilbur Wright in 1903, and that's 86 years after Cayley died. And that's one of the many, many stories that he talks about in his book. It's absolutely fascinating to trace the history of the airplane. And again, you can get that on Amazon. Thanks to all of you for listening to this version of the show. Make it count, everybody.
SuperTea.com. Powdy Arco Tea helps regenerate new cells. Everything from the cells in our skin to the cells in our organs, so they function properly. Great for healthy people and can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a disease. A 1-pound package of tea is $34.95 plus shipping. To order, please visit DrinkSuperTea.com or call 818-965-9113. That's 818-965-9113.
As the coronavirus crisis continues, I've said it before, I'll say it again. Now's not the time to retreat, panic, or stress out. Instead, refocus, reimagine, and reinvent. In my book, Deal Your Own Destiny, Increase Your Odds, Win Big, and Become Extraordinary, the whole focus is on overcoming adversity. I share the secrets of some of the most accomplished people on the planet and how it applies to you. I agree with George Eliot, who famously said, "It's never too late to be who you might have been." Pick up a copy of my book, Deal Your Own Destiny, on Amazon.com.